Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Scaretroducing. Normally, we're a horror movie podcast for horror movie virgins, covering some of the latest releases to discover if they could potentially be a gateway into the genre for first-time viewers. For 2023, however, we decided to do something a little bit different. Not only are we going to still cover the latest releases, but we're also going to put ourselves back into the horror movie virgin camp and take a look at some of the defining movies and franchises that helped spawn the dark and delicious delights that we know and love today. These will be undebatable classics of horror that neither myself nor Hizela have seen. For our first franchise, we've gone all the way back to the 1930s to dive into the world of Universal Monsters. These creatures have continued to thrill audiences for almost 100 years on the big screen. First up is 1931's Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi. In this episode, we discuss our views on vampires, the typecasting of Lugosi, and the infuriating concept of lost movies. I hope you enjoy.
I am Dracula.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Scaretroducing. I'm Callum McNabb.
And I'm Kisela Martinez.
And as explained in that little intro there, we're doing something slightly different, which is instead of a new release, we are going through one by one horror franchise or horror classics or whatever, something that we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
We are horror movie virgins in this respect. And it made sense, I think, to go not all the way back to the start. It's not silent movies, but going back to probably one of the earliest horror movie legacy things, franchises or whatever, which is, of course, the Universal Monsters. I found a lovely little box set, the Blu-ray, and I'm going to talk about this.
Yes.
The Blu-ray collection, or the essential collection of Universal Monsters. There goes the book. I bought this secondhand from CEX in December. Hizela is looking at me with wide eyes.
Yeah, someone like is going to get burned.
And yeah, that was all well and good. I thought that makes sense. That makes a good idea for doing the podcast. I like having this collection. And then we sat down after a few weeks after Christmas, after New Year, sat down, let's start, let's watch the first one, which is Dracula. And of the 8 discs, for some reason there's only 7 in the box. And the one that's missing is Dracula. So we had to watch it via HBO Max?
Yeah, with the VPN.
VPN, yeah. HBO Max. And I am currently in some sort of battle with CEX. Oh, and they're like HR, not HR department, they're like complaints department or whatever. Because I don't have the receipt. And of course I don't have the receipt. It was Christmas. People throw things out at Christmas. Things get lost.
Well, why did you didn't check before and everything? And that's so weird because you always check. And normally they do show you when you are buying it, like, look, it's not that much scratch or something because it's a secondhand store. So I was surprised that, I don't know, like, you didn't check.
Just one of these things. It just got missed. But thanks to apparently consumer rights in the UK, as long as you can prove that an item was faulty when you bought it, and faulty in quotes here because it's not faulty, it's just missing a part. But I'm not trying to get a refund from them. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, can you just give me the disc? Like, I've got 7 discs. I bought an 8 disc box set. So at the moment, there is no updates on that. The moment is they are looking into it. But I currently have every other movie. Well, technically no, because the Dracula disc also has the Spanish Dracula version on it, which if you know anything about the Universal Monsters, which is they use the same sets daytime to film the English language version and then at nighttime and finish film this the Spanish language version using the same sets, obviously different stars. And it must be different because it's like 20-30 minutes longer or something than the English language. Like, it must be a different movie.
Yeah, and we wanted to.
So I really wanted to watch it and compare them, but.
And talk about it.
Anyway, it's just English language Dracula, 1931, for our first ever dive into this sort of world. And the first question I have for Gisela is, what did you know about this movie before seeing it for the first time?
Nothing. Nothing. I know the main, I mean, it's not like I know the main guy, but I've seen in things, in pop culture, the image of the Dracula with doing the eyes, like weird eyes, you know, like kind of like to control someone's mind.
Mm-hmm.
That picture of the person doing those.
Bela Lugosi.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Okay.
That's the only thing. But I knew that when I was watching the movie and I was like, oh, that's a guy. So apart from that, yeah. I didn't know
so before I put the movie in, you didn't. You
no,
did, like, hadn't connected the dots
no,
that was
connect,
the
no.
Dracula version. Yep. Did you know that that was Dracula? That image that you had in your mind, were you aware that that was an image of Dracula in cinema?
Not particularly, but I think I thought it's something to do with something related with, like, a gentleman or something.
So you didn't even think it was horror or...
No, I just thought it was, like, I know it's in, like, an old movie and someone, like, like a classic, about a classic, but I didn't know which movie.
Oh. Well, it turns out to be Dracula from 1931, Universal Pictures. Okay, so I'm similar to you in terms of, I didn't know much about this movie. I knew Bela Lugosi was in it. I knew that, as I said, they'd done a Spanish language version. That was really about it. I'd never seen it before. I have read the book Dracula, but I wasn't aware of how faithful or different this movie ended up being. So I was, like you, going in pretty blind, except I knew Bela Lugosi, and I knew his voice as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty... You must have...
No.
I'm trying to think, because obviously you've grown up in Mexico, but do people not talk like Dracula, like this?
Yeah. Right. But I didn't know it was because of that. I thought because all the movies that exist about Dracula... Normally, Dracula kind of speaks like that. And you know, like, sometimes there's movies of... cheap movies of Dracula or, like, parodies. And they always speak like that. But I
it's
never thought...
That's what I mean. It's because of Bela Lugosi.
I never wondered the source of, you know, like...
Of the voice. So, speaking of the source of the voice, because these movies are so old and so classics, we do have, for the first time on this podcast... We have context and we have information that can be discussed and a little history into how horror all ties itself up. Bela Lugosi, let's start there. He is the star of this movie. Now, he's from Hungary. Mm-hmm. Probably the most famous Hungarian actor. I don't know, but he's a big star. He actually
is
only
he still
paid...
alive?
No, he's not. Bela Lugosi's dead, as the song says.
Bela Lugosi's dead.
What?
No, the thing is just like, yeah, it makes sense. The movies were 1931. And he was like probably like 20s doing that or 30s.
He was born in 1882.
Oh, wow.
So in this movie, what did you think when you watched this movie?
I don't
know,
there was a lot of makeup.
Yeah, I know, but...
I thought it was like late 20s, 30s. I don't know. It was like Dracula. I don't know.
So he's almost
he's like 50. Fucking 50.
He's 49 in this movie, yeah.
Fucking senor.
Died at age 73 in 1956. That's not what I want to talk about Bela Lugosi. I didn't want to talk about his death. What I did want to talk about, though, was the fact that he has basically typecast as Dracula. This is what he's famous for, playing Count Dracula.
Okay.
Now, he actually only played Dracula twice in cinema. In this film, 1931, and then again 17 years later, in 1948, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which is, I assume, more of a comedy. I haven't seen any Abbott and Costello movies, but as far as I'm aware, they are comedies. That was it. No more Dracula. He did, however, play a vampire in three other movies. In reverse order, they are Mother Riley Meets the Vampire, 1952.
Mm-hmm.
Character was Von Hausen. In 1943, The Return of the Vampire, He played two characters, Armand Tesla and Dr. Hugo Bruckner. And in 1935, in a film called Mark of the Vampire, his character was Count Mora. Now, these three performances have been described as essentially Dracula in everything but name.
Okay.
So I think that's probably why he's so linked with the character of Count Dracula, even though he only played him twice. And one of them is, as far as I'm aware, a comedy. Now, speaking of his career and legacy, not just in the big screen, as I said, there's also a famous song called Bela Lugosi's Dead by the band Bauhaus.
That I just heard.
Isela just heard for the first time. It was released in 1979, apparently is considered the first goth rock song. It's been covered by the likes of Nine Inch Nails and Churches, who did a version which appeared on the soundtrack to 2014's Vampire Academy. So what I wanted to get at is, do you think it harms Bela Lugosi's career and legacy to be tied up so familiar? Like, because he acted in quite a lot of films, but it is, he's Dracula. What do you think? Because I mean, famously, he was not a fan of being considered just that.
But did he have other movies that he's not Dracula?
Loads.
For all his movies. Oh, okay. Again, I don't know, so I don't know. I can't tell you because I don't know.
If you're an actor, you're an actor and you want to do loads of things.
Yes. But if you're telling me he did other movies that it was not just Dracula, then no. I thought yes because I thought, oh, he only did five movies and the five of them he was playing a vampire.
Right.
But if he did other things, then no.
But nothing to this level of success.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, but I don't know. Like, if there were different genres, like
horror. I think most of the movies he did ended up being horror. And as what I'm trying to get is he was famously quite annoyed by this. He wanted to do more than just horror and more than just vampires. Mm. So I'm trying to ask, like, you put yourself in those shoes. You put yourself in an actor.
I mean,
cinema is huge. It's
I know the answer is like, yes, it did because it put it in a box and probably like that. Nobody will cast it for other things because, oh, you are Dracula.
Yeah.
But
you've got the slow voice.
But he did had other movies and maybe like, I don't know.
And also as well, like, it's undeniable that he did have some form of success and does have some form of legacy.
That's the thing.
And I think most actors would probably kill for that. You know, to be thought of 90 years later and be talked about as like, you are Dracula. You're the voice of Dracula still.
Yeah, like Dracula is like such an iconic thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you play like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think someone else that play like a thing. But it, like the Batmans, the Spider-Mans, everybody is like, ugh, it's all like a mix, you know?
Yeah. So someone that's so tied to one character.
Yeah.
Easy.
Who?
Johnny Depp, Captain Jack Sparrow.
That one. Yes, that's true. Yes.
Right. I'm not even the biggest Johnny Depp fan, that's what I'm saying. But Johnny Depp has had success outside of that.
No, but I mean, nobody has played also Jack Sparrow.
But other people have played Dracula.
Yeah, but he will always will be the original, you know? We're going to get to that.
He's not. Yes, he is, and he isn't. But what I'm saying is, like, I get why he would be annoyed by that as an actor, as a creative person with ambition. But at the same time, I would say that you'd need to say to him, look, most people aren't going to get this. Most people are not going to get as big as you've got, even if it's just for one film. And so I think Lugosi is, I don't know, it's complicated. And I think he's a complicated figure that goes along with that. Anyway, not just to speak about the star, but also the man who made this film, Todd Browning.
Okay.
Famous director in his own right through the silent era of Hollywood. He has two main talkie classics, which are this film, Dracula, and a year later, a horror film called Freaks.
We didn't lie to you, folks. We told you we had living, breathing monstrosities. You laughed at them, shuddered at them, and yet, but for the accident of birth, you might be even as they are. They did not ask to be brought into the world, but into the world they came. Their code is a law unto themselves. Offend one, and you offend them all.
Okay, never heard of that.
You never heard of it?
No.
Okay, I've never seen it, but I have heard of it, and it's usually involved in... I think it might have even been in Shudder's 101 Scariest Movie Moments.
Okay.
Might have been. Maybe it was on... Did you ever watch Bravo's 100 Scariest Moments?
Yeah,
it was on,
like, yeah,
25 years ago. Yeah, I think it might have been on one of those, but I'm aware of like Freaks. So Todd Browning is responsible for both of those films. What I wanted to get to is he also directed Mark of the Vampire from 1935, which I already mentioned, starred Bela Lugosi as a vampire, but not as Dracula. So that's interesting already. But what's more interesting is I actually researched that film completely separately only a few weeks ago.
Why?
Exactly. So, the film Mark of the Vampire is considered a remake of a 1927 silent film, also directed by Browning, called London After Midnight. Now, London After Midnight gained some notoriety because it was lost in a vault fire in MGM Studios in 1965.
Okay.
So I heard about this thanks to a tweet from Monster Movie Happy Hour. They're like podcasters, YouTubers, they've got everything going on. They tweeted a few weeks ago noting that this year, London After Midnight will pass into public domain. Its copyright will expire. That's it, it's public domain. But nobody has a nobody seems to have a copy of it.
Okay.
The film just doesn't exist. And so they were just tweeting out saying like, look, if anyone has any copy or knows anything about this, get in touch or get the word out there. Which, as far as I'm aware, hasn't yielded any responses yet, but I think that's what Twitter can do. So hopefully, again, nobody listens to this podcast, but maybe the one person in the world who has a copy of London After Midnight might.
It's listening right now. Come on.
So if you do, I only found out about this movie like 3 weeks ago, but it's directed by Todd Browning. He remakes it with Bela Lugosi. It's all tied into the world of horror. Anyway, TCM, Turner Classic Movies, in 2002, they did a reconstruction, 45-minute reconstruction using still photographs that are left from behind the scenes and whatever, and the script or whatever to tell its story. But what's most legendary about London After Midnight is the still images of the main actor Lon Chaney in makeup. So these images of him are pretty iconic in terms of like, this is what people are like, we want to find the movie because of that, like, and these images actually inspired a very recent mainstream horror icon. Can you guess who? And this is confirmed by the director of that film.
Okay.
Which horror character did that inspire?
The Babadook.
Correct.
Yay.
The Babadook. So what I'm trying to say is, or not what I'm trying to say, what I'm saying, a lost movie from 1927 can inspire horror movies today. This is the point of, I think, of our podcast. This is what we like to do, is tie knots here and just, there's trails everywhere. And as I say, directed by Todd Browning, it's lost. He remakes it with Bela Lugosi. He's already made a movie with Bela Lugosi. It's Dracula. It's the movie we're talking about today. It all connects, if you want it to. So, moving on from both the stars, what about the character himself, Dracula? Created in 1897 by...
Bram.
Very close. Bram Stoker.
Oh, Bram.
Irish author Bram Stoker. Did you know that? Irish? Did you know?
No, I don't know.
There you go. So, Dracula, technically Irish. Even though it's set in Transylvania. But yes, Irish author Bram Stoker. Gothic novel in 1897 of the same name. Have you ever read it?
No.
Okay, I have. I actually thought I still had a copy of it. I just went
and checked. Yeah, you had like a nice book you bought in Canada.
No, that was The Pictures of Dorian Gray.
Oh.
I still got that because that's such a good addition.
Yeah,
I'm not getting rid of it. It's so nice.
Okay, so I can't, yeah. I mean,
no, the Dracula one I had was pretty plain. But I thought I still had it. And I just went to check there. No, I must have donated it to you know, a bookstore or whatever. I read it. I remember liking it. I've seen a few people online over the last few years say it's actually quite boring when compared to something like Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. I think it was just one of the first like adult novels slash classics I read. And I just was like, oh my god, this is one of the canon. This has inspired so much in horror. I must love this.
Yeah.
So I would like to go back and reread it and be like, do I actually love it or do I not?
But that's the thing. Like, sometimes you are not in the mood. You're still mentally not prepared for what you're reading. Like, the same happens to you with Stephen King. Like, you're like, oh. But you kind of start getting into it until, like, you're like, wow, all the details. First, you were bothered about all the details.
And that's slightly different.
And you are
yeah.
more like a... Okay, I get it. Like, I'm set into the, like, the mind of this guy. Like, he's describing everything, and I feel like I'm there.
Yes. But as I said, I've seen people
say... But it took you time to get into...
To get into Stephen King, yeah. It took me time. But that wasn't because I found it difficult to read.
Not difficult to read. It's just, like, it's not what you were expecting, probably.
Yeah, I actually thought Stephen King was really boring
yeah.
when I first started reading him.
So I'm not surprised that when you read, like, oh, Dracula.
No, I liked it when I read it.
No, but probably you were like, ah, and you were like, oh, okay.
That's what I mean. I'd like to go back. I, first of all, would like to read Frankenstein, because mm-hmm. I've never read Frankenstein. And I, you know, it's, again, another undeniable classic. And we're going to be talking about it, because part of the yeah. Universal Monsters movies. I'd like to read that, and then I would like to go back and read Dracula and see how they compare. Because, as I say, very recently... I've just seen people say, like, it's not as well written, it's not as good. And I was, like, maybe, like, 16, 17. And I think I was just like, I love all things horror. I love the classics. And therefore, I was like, it's good. And yeah. I would like to reread it now and be like, is it good? I don't know. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, it's inspired so much, so it must be worthwhile in some cases. Now, not only is it a novel, it goes to the stage, and then eventually it comes to the screen, and it finally makes its way to the screen in an unofficial adaptation from Germany called Nosferatu in 1922.
Oh, okay, that's the first, like...
Well, according to Wikipedia, and I googled this, but then I went out of Wikipedia and I actually googled it to see, like, where is it verified from, mm-hmm. and it's sort of, some people say this, it's not before Nosferatu, other people say it is. There's a film from 1921, apparently, called Dracula's Death, that is the first cinematic adaptation of Dracula. But again, that's disputed in terms of whether or not it came out before Nosferatu. And secondly, like London After Midnight, film is lost.
Oh my god.
Oh, we're going to get into the subject of lost films. Because, like, this is the thing. Lost films, obviously most films get lost.
Yeah.
Think of how many films get made.
And back then they didn't have copies or
right,
stuff.
Right, but then, this is what I was going to get to. You kind of think, well, we don't lose films anymore. Batgirl. Are we going to lose Batgirl?
Mm.
Is that a lost film? Nobody's
good
seen it.
Point.
That's what I mean. It seems like such an old idea, and yet a big superhero movie currently just went through that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, though, the copies do still exist, so maybe it'll come out one day. But anyway, London After Midnight, inspired by Babadook, lost. Dracula's Death, apparently the first screen adaptation of Dracula, lost. So anyway, Nosferatu comes out in 1922.
Okay, can I ask you something?
Yes.
How many adaptations of the novel have been done?
Oof. Fucking loads.
Exactly,
well,
you know how many.
So how many adaptations of the novel exactly? I don't know. But there's movies like Son of Dracula. There's Dracula's Kiss and this, that,
yeah.
and the next. Like, they're not adaptations of Dracula. So I don't actually know.
Okay.
But Nosferatu is the first big one.
Okay, yeah. I've seen that image of the bald guy
yeah,
with pointy
Count
ears.
Count Orlok, he plays in the movie, not okay. Count Dracula. As I say, it's an unofficial adaptation.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No, but I know what's
how
it looks like.
Again, years ago. And I remember, again, at the time, liking it a lot. But I would like to rewatch it. I watched it online during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a silent film. It's not, as far as I'm aware, it's not that long. Anyway, in the case of Nosferatu, despite them changing several details, the Stoker estate, the Bram Stoker estate, sued this adaptation for copyright infringement and won. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The court ruling then ordered all copies of the film to be destroyed. And according to the research I did, this seems to have been followed pretty strictly.
Oh my god.
And we're actually still very lucky that Nosferatu still exists. Because they destroyed apparently a shit ton of copies.
Oh, wow.
And a few somehow made their way to America and then distribution and copied from there. So we've already talked about two lost films. Nosferatu, an undisputed classic, could have been another one. Speaking of Nosferatu, remade in 1979 by Werner Herzog as Nosferatu the Vampire. Never seen it, but I want to.
Okay.
There's a 2000 film called Shadow of the Vampire, starring Willem Dafoe and John Malkovich, which is a fictionalized version of the making of Nosferatu. And then finally, there's going to be another version of Nosferatu, mm-hmm. which was supposed to be starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Harry Styles, but is now starring Lily Rose Depp and Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, I like them.
And it's going to be the fourth film by Robert Eggers.
Oh, wow. Of
The Witch and The Lighthouse and The Northman vein.
Yeah, I love The Witch.
That's Nosferatu. That's the big...
The film that we're not talking
about. No, but that's the big introduction. That's Dracula on screen. It's nearly destroyed. It's the one everyone, like... Or not the one everyone remembers, but it's the... This is what Dracula can be. Okay. This is scary, blah, 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 blah. But Dracula then becomes, as I say, Bela Lugosi. And then also in the 50s, Christopher Lee, the English actor Christopher Lee, who does Sauron in Lord of the Rings and The Wicker Man and things like that. He also famously played Dracula 9 times. So Dracula has basically 2 or 3 really famous portrayals. And Christopher Lee apparently is not a fan of Bela Lugosi's, saying that he had no menace, shock or fright.
Is he the one, the Dracula, that has like a hair?
No, that's Gary Oldman in Francis Ford Coppola's
That's also a Dracula that is in my head. If you think Dracula, I think in that one.
So that's from 1992. I've got that on DVD. We should watch that. It's a good movie.
Oh, okay.
Now, apparently, Gary Oldman, he's the opposite of Christopher Lee. His favourite Dracula is Bela Lugosi. So Dracula, as I say, it's got these big actors, these big performances. Christopher Lee is second in line to that. And he's not a fan of the first guy, Bela Lugosi.
Okay.
Then Francis Ford Coppola, who only does it once, but he does it in a big movie by a big director. He is a fan of the first... He's my favourite is the first guy.
I just feel like this should be a YouTube video and you can like connect dogs and put images because I'm so lost. I'm so sorry if you're listening to this that you're so lost. I kind of know about this, but not that much and I'm so lost. But yeah, yes, Callum.
So anyway, what I wanted to say is regardless of your opinions on everything, I think it's pretty easy to see why this film becomes a classic. This film becomes pretty iconic in terms of horror, in terms of pop culture. I think it's easy to see why viewers would be drawn into how Lugosi speaks as Dracula with the sort of drawn out the, I bid you welcome, like long pauses. Yeah. Like it almost, you kind of want to rush him to the end of sentences. Do you know who else does that?
Who?
My dad.
Your dad's Dracula.
My dad is Dracula, yeah. Apparently. He doesn't have a Hungarian accent, but he does speak and you're just like, you're kind of like, come on, finish the sentence. He takes his time.
Yeah. It's just a dramatic way to speak. That's all.
Anyway, let's get to the film itself. I'm completely skipping over a whole point, but let's get to the film itself.
Yay! So, because I saw this film and I can have an opinion now.
Okay, so, did you think or... Do you think you could understand why people would find this scary at the time? Or even today, do you find it scary?
No, I didn't find it scary.
You didn't find it scary. Okay, I would agree with that as well. And as I say, going back to Christopher Lee's opinion of Bela Lugosi, I would agree. I don't think this film's got any menace, fright, or a shock, or whatever it was he said.
Yeah, but I do understand why people back then, I mean the 30s, seen this film. I mean, it's really well done.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, I mean, when I think well done, it's like they're in a car, like in a carriage, like there, and then you see like lightnings. It's like, oh, how did they do that back in the 30s? Like, clearly it's a painting in the background and the carriage is just going and at some point, obviously, it's going to stop and it's a painting. I don't know. But I thought, okay, maybe they never seen something like this.
And but also, I mean, they have been making movies for at this point, like 20 years, there's the whole silent era.
I know, and German expressionism, I don't know,
which has got big sets. Like, it's not unusual.
I just think, like, oh, well, it's dark and it's this, like, weird creature. And, like, they're talking about mysteries and, like, legends. And they were like, oh, what's that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I don't know. People back then were, like, really pussies. So,
yeah, well, people back then were pussies. I don't know if I would quite agree with that, but what I think is interesting is that, do you remember the Shudder 101 movie moments?
Yeah.
Horror movie moments that we watched? They had two Universal monster movies on the list. They had The Wolfman from 1941 and Frankenstein from 1931, same year as this. But they didn't have Dracula. They had Nosferatu from 1922.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have this Dracula. Then they've got Frankenstein and the Wolfman from this franchise.
Okay.
I think it, from my understanding, that tells me everything I need to know about this film is it's not that scary, and we can't even use the concept of, but it was scary back then. Because the Wolfman's not scary, but you're putting it on the list because you're like, nobody had ever seen a man transform into a wolf before. Like, wow, this was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I don't think this film has anything like that. I found this film to be quite disappointing, I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, as you said, the transition from silence film to this, to now, like, speaking.
Yeah.
Okay, probably it was, like, too much already, but the music, like, not having music on the movie is just, like, I can hear myself breathing, I can hear my heartbeat. And then it's quite quiet when, like, they're gonna do something, and they take so, like, they show you, like, how they're, like, oh, I'm leaving. And you can see him walking. Like, you don't need to see the whole way that the person is leaving. Like, I'm like, cut that. Just, like, I'm maybe not that well edited.
Okay.
They were so, like, I don't know.
But that's what I mean. Like, this is why I would like, and I'm excited to do this sort of series and go through these movies, because the last movie in the box set is The Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is 1954.
So that's because basically this is going to be a
23 years between that and Dracula. So what is the evolution
is in terms, like, of filming style? Is that, like, in chronological order?
Is it in chronological order? It should be, Dracula 1931, Frankenstein 1931, The Mummy 1932, okay. Invisible Man 33, Bride of Frankenstein 35, Wolfman 41, Phantom of the Opera 43, Creature from the Black Lagoon 54. That's all the films we're covering, by the way. I know there are more in the franchise. This is just what I've got in this box set. But what I'm saying is, in terms of wanting it to speed up or the way it's edited, I'm in two minds as to, like, is that just how things were done?
No,
I've not seen too many movies from the 30s.
Well, yeah, that's true. We haven't.
But so for me, the big one was the music. I agree with you.
Yeah.
So there's no music in this film. There's no score.
For me also was, like, I don't know anything about films, like, technical words or whatever. But sometimes I didn't know where people were in, like, the room.
Right.
Like, if they will say, I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see it in one door and then going through another one's like, wait, what? Where was that door? Or, like, there was one that Dracula is in London now. No, he's in London. Yeah.
So arriving London. Comes to London quite quickly. Yeah,
in London. And then sees this girl selling flowers or giving flowers away. And then you just see him straight. And then the girl, and then Dracula is, I thought, walking backwards. It's like, oh, so he did something to the girl.
Yeah.
And
he's walking away from the crane. Yeah,
coming awake. But I was like, what? Like, I don't know the positions of one, the camera. Well, he's
walking away from the crime scene.
Yeah, but again, it's like, what? Like, it got so confused to me. In some parts, like, okay, oh, the door's supposed to be there in my, as a specter, like, sitting.
Right.
It should be walking there, but walk the opposite way. So it confused me a lot. It happened, like, multiple times during the movie.
I never got that.
Oh, so many times.
So if we just pick that scene that you're talking about, he arrives in London, he attacks this girl.
Yes.
Really slowly. like the you know, the whole joke about like the monsters just walking and the zombies would still catch up to you even though they walk and you mm-hmm. run. Dracula moves so slowly in this movie.
Yeah.
And I get that he speaks slowly, but like you could maybe make him move a bit faster. But he attacks this girl so slowly and she screams really late.
Yeah.
It's like so obvious that this man is attacking her.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think there's just stuff in this movie where I was like, are they trying to make it not as seem as violent? But you're watching it going, he's clearly attacking her. I know what's mm-hmm. happening. And she's doing nothing about it. And then she screams.
Yeah.
And then we cut and Dracula's walking away. Like, I have no problem with that cut. Like, he's walking away from the... He's attacked this woman, he's walking away.
Yeah.
I don't get where your confusion comes
from. No, you... Like, I don't know. It's like so many parts. Also, like, there's a part that... Oh, I just arrived to this mansion, blah, blah. Welcome, Dracula, whatever, whatever. And then it's like, oh, I'm going to my room, the lady says, Mina. And then... I was like, why she's going away? I thought her room was in the other side. And then suddenly you are in another room. And I was like, what are... I'm so confused.
Okay. As I say, I don't remember ever getting confused by...
I did get confused a lot of times. And seriously, I can
Where are
you after
just not
this.
Paying attention?
No, I was paying attention. Probably I was being too picky. That was my problem. I was being too picky. Like, no, this is wrong. Like, you are telling me, like the person watching the movie, that you are basically walking back instead of walking away. So, yeah, I don't know. I just got the impression that a lot of the directions or like positioning in the house or in the wherever they are, it just felt weird.
Now you just make me want to go watch it again because I don't remember any of that.
Oh, really? No. Oh, and that was the... I only had 2 points to discuss, like, in this okay. episode, the music and that.
You're trying
to
speed me up through a movie, and you've only got 2 things
yes,
to say.
Yes, because I thought you might notice, and I thought it was a well-known thing, like, directors were, back then, just getting away, like, how to, you know, like, know the environment, like, where they're working, like, the houses, like, how they work with the cameras, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's the most sophisticated put together.
No, I don't know.
I
just
world,
and
but.
Because I thought, oh, they're reusing the sets. So let's make you walk and back, and that's gonna be the same. But for me, it's like, wait, you just walk. You came from that street. Why are you going back? You know, like something. I don't know. It was just weird to me. In some part, like I was so confused. Like, where actually am I right now?
Right. Okay. Yeah, I didn't get that. But okay, that's fine. I agree with you about the music. I had thought this movie would have music. And then when we were watching it and it didn't have music, it has a bit of Swan Lake during the opening credits. And then the rest of it is silent. I was like, is that an artistic choice? Or is that we've just moved from silent movies into talkies and we haven't figured out yet. Yes, we had a lot of music in the silent era. But are we now, like, are they considering that, oh, the music was just there because you couldn't have dialogue, but now we can have dialogue, so we don't need music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a disconnect between them figuring out what is needed and it actually working, etc., etc.? Turns out, apparently, it was just a cost measure, as far as I can see,
okay.
just to not get a score. So the movie is basically silent, except for dialogue, but... As I say, Dracula speaks so slowly. And there's nothing in between. It's just silence. Philip Glass did compose a score in 1998, which I hear is good and does work with the film. And you can watch that version on the disc, on the box set that I bought. But I don't have that disc. I'm trying to get it. But we watched without the score, as it was originally shown. To me, doesn't work without the music.
Yeah.
Second thing I would say, I think it's too focused on the London elements of the story. Now, apparently, this is because it's mainly based off the Broadway show rather than the novel.
Okay.
Because the novel was adapted into a Broadway show. Bela Lugosi was in that show first. And then I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was a cost measure. I don't know if it was because... The Stoker Estate had fucking sued Nosferatu basically into extinction and they were just scared. So they thought we'll base it off of somebody else's work off of Bram Stoker rather than directly off Bram's.
Okay.
I don't know. But anyway, based off the stage play and that makes several changes to the novel, one of which is that the movie is set mainly in London. The novel is obviously divided. The first half of the novel is Jonathan Harper is in Transylvania with Dracula writing letters. Mm-hmm. He's kept prisoner by Dracula. Jonathan Harper never goes to Transylvania once in this movie. Renfield does, and then Renfield takes Dracula to London.
But this, like, and then for he meets example, Jonathan this Harper. This is like you, there. Because you know this because you read the book, right? Because I've seen other adaptations.
I know Dracula comes to London.
TV shows.
But part of it, not most of it, but I know that there's a set, even without the novel, Transylvania is an important part of the story.
Yes.
This movie, it's not. It's the opening. That's it.
Yes, but for example, I've seen other TV shows and other movies where they just start on the ocean when they're being transferred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they just say, like, I'm from there.
I'm from Transylvania.
Yeah, and just, I don't know, like, it didn't matter to me that much.
Okay, but the reason it matters to me is because it's black and white, it's all quiet. If there's one thing I think that's going to work with that, it is these gothic-y era empty castles with cobwebs.
Yeah.
And the movie just abandons it and moves it to a townhouse in London. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think it feels too soap opera-ish of the time.
Yes,
just seeing people sitting around talking at a townhouse, drinking tea. I'm like, this is not creepy in any way.
It's just basing two rooms in the house.
Yeah.
Like in Nina's bedroom and then in
the living room.
Yeah.
And they just talk about, like, oh, Dracula seems odd. And then Van Helsing comes up with his theories that he's a vampire and stuff. But it's just people sitting around chatting in what is at the time a pretty modern setting.
Yeah.
And I just was very surprised. I was like, I want castles. Maybe I'm a simple guy. I don't know.
If, now that we're talking about when they are in the house, that was another part that also confused me. I was paying attention, Callum, before you say that. But so Dracula goes to the opera and meet these two girls.
Yeah.
And Harper?
Jonathan Harper, yeah.
Jonathan Harper and
Mina.
Mina and the other woman.
The other woman, I can't remember her name. Lucy.
Yeah. So, and then Mina said, I'm staying at Lucy's house. And they're like, okay, so they're going to Lucy's house. Again, I don't know. It's because everything was like black and white or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, Mina's at her house. Dracula comes, attacks Lucy. And now Lucy is a vampire.
Yeah.
And then the next time we're going to that room. Again, I don't know if it's the same room, but it looks like, I felt like all the time we're at Lucy's house.
Right.
But no, then it's where Mina's house.
Mina and Jonathan's house.
Yeah.
Jonathan Harper.
So I was like, okay, your friend is dead now? And then what? Like, then Mina has weird dreams about, like, Dracula, or, like, she thinks it's something. Like, I get Biden, like, I think I feel something, blah, blah. And then the doctor comes. I feel like it's quite messy.
This movie.
Yeah, like, when everything happens, I'm like, wait, what? Like, because we also have a scene where a body is being examined with a lot of doctors around.
It's like, Lucy's body, if I'm correct. Yes. So Dracula has killed Lucy.
Yes. So they're like doing like, oh, the examinator, and then like we jump. And then we're with Mina. I was like, what? So Mina was sick? And I'm like, what is going on? Like, you jump from here to there. And also that, I think, made me a little bit confused. You did put subtitles. I did understand, so...
Yeah, I did put subtitles.
I just feel like it doesn't tie up, like, it's just, again, rush.
Okay.
Because it's really short. And they wanted to cover a lot.
It's short, yeah.
And, yeah, just, like, snappy, like, cut, then, and it's like, okay, sorry, I can't put together, or that doesn't go with that one that way, but get it, okay? You need to change the subject.
When you say snappy... Do you mean pace-wise? Because I'm the opposite. I think it spends far too long in, as I say, the living room of Jonathan Harper's house.
No,
it takes far too long,
like,
in there.
The scenes are long.
Yeah.
But then, when, for example, that scene finished, it's like, oh, now I'm cutting flowers. Or, like, what? Like, how does this relate to that? Like, I don't know. I just feel like in the first half of the movie, it's really like, you're here, you're there, you're... And you're like, what's going on? And then the last part is just in the house.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like, I, going into this, sort of expected, maybe not like the most fantastical set pieces, like, you know, some of the stuff you've seen from German expressors and with like big wild sets, whatever. But I was just like, you know, they're not, are they going to have Dracula fly somehow? I don't know. Like, maybe that's a bit too fantastical for the time, but what set pieces are they going to have? And all I can remember from this movie, all I can remember is them sitting in the living room. And that's it. Because even Renfield, who's Dracula's servant, basically, he adores Dracula. He wants to be Dracula to be his master, whatever. Even him, he's staying at the institution, or he's being held at the institution.
And then he's just
but
in
every
the
time
house.
He breaks out, because it's like right next to the house, he just gets into the house.
Yes.
And nobody seems that bothered by it.
And that's the thing. That was the other thing.
It's just always in the living room.
I was
even
like,
when Renfield's there, and I was like, are people freaking out that Renfield's there? And they all just sort of treat it as a joke.
That's the thing. It's like the hospital connected to the house in some
it
way.
Is, yeah, they said that. They
like,
said that.
But it's just like break. He can just freely go, because we see him like in kind of like a prison cell or something. Yeah. And I was like, is you open the door and go into the house and stuff like that?
So that's what I mean. I don't think it can quite figure out if it should have comic relief or not, and also how to make this story interesting. As I say, it's based off the stage play. I don't actually know what the stage play is. I've never seen it. But it felt like a stage play version.
So this movie is a classic and is what it is because of the actor.
Bela Lugosi. 100% it's because of Bela Lugosi. Right? It can't be. No, but that's the thing, though. Yes. But he never plays Dracula again, except one more time, 70 years later, in a comedy. Mm-hmm. So it's because of him, but he doesn't go on to do...
Yeah.
He goes on to do other similar things, but he doesn't go on to do another one of these. So I'm fascinated by the legacy that this movie has. Because, like, if I look at the scores online, and I did, so, like, on Rotten Tomatoes... Critic score 94%, audience score 82%, IMDb 7.4 out of 10, Letterboxd 3.6 out of 5, Metacritic 71%. In my opinion, those scores are so high for what the movie actually is.
Mm-hmm.
They're way too high, in my opinion. Not to say that it's overrated, underrated, whatever, but like just watching it for what it is, I don't think this is a good movie.
Or again, is that just
I think they're
us,
taking into account the
is
legacy.
Is that just us that we don't get that kind of films? Like, maybe it's the first one that we're watching from the 30s and we are just knowing the mindset of that?
Maybe as we
maybe
go
we
on through
we need to
it,
watch more
watch
of
more
that.
We'll
maybe we just, yeah, maybe we're like, actually, I need to rewatch. Maybe in a few years we're going to be talking like, I rewatched this and actually I can see, I appreciate.
Okay,
I
but
do,
for example, out of the films that I said we're going to be covering, there's only one I've seen, The Invisible Man, 1913.
And I loved that one.
I didn't love it, but
I
think
like
it was better than this.
Yes.
From what I remember.
And to be invisible.
I was super
like,
impressed.
What?
There was nothing really in this movie that impressed me. The movie kind of knows that Lugosi is a star.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps cutting to him, like, front on, mm-hmm. looking down the camera.
With the silly eyes. It's like so silly.
But like it knows that that's an image that's going to stick in people's minds.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And it works. You know, it has stuck in people's minds. It's stuck in popular culture. It's worked. But the problem is, again, no score. It's just silence. He's just looking down the barrel of the camera. And I cannot get it into my head that people would be freaking out seeing
that.
Yeah,
no, I can't.
Maybe they were. Who knows? But I, from a modern day perspective, I could watch The Invisible Man and be like, I can get why people are freaked out by that in 1933. I don't get that from this Dracula.
Yeah.
I get a boring, sort of empty movie with a performance that has gone down in history.
Yeah.
That's what I get from this.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
There is stuff I do like, just to, before we finish. There's stuff, it's not a terrible film. One, the mirror reveal. I like that. The reveal that Dracula has mm-hmm. has no reflection. And this isn't anything new. What I like about this is that apparently on the stage version of the show, I don't know how they did it, but they used like a sort of big mirror, like a, I don't know, like a wardrobe size mirror. Okay. I don't know what you would call it, but, and that must be so people in the back of the theater can see that, oh my God, he's got no reflection. Ha ha, whatever. Mm-hmm. In the movie, it's just like a little, it's not like a match. It's like a little box.
A little box
like
with
a mirror. A cigar box, essentially, that has a mirror on the inside. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the actor who plays Van Helsing was not happy about this change. I think it works better because it's a small mirror.
Yeah.
The camera shows you.
He's got no
reflection. And then Dracula knocks it away. Mm-hmm. When he's shown it.
I laugh there when he knocks it away. It's so dramatic. So like, oh, like you need music. Anyway.
It needs music. But what I like is that it's a small mirror. And I think for a very brief moment, it can implement doubt in your head of like, wait, did he have no reflection? That was a small mirror, to be fair. Mm. Did we see exactly what we were supposed to see? I think that works better if the movie was going to go into that, but it doesn't. It basically is like he has no reflection. It confirms it, and that's
it. Yeah, he gets scares, and that's it.
And I was just like, I think that's a crumb of a thing there, and they kind of blow it. Anyway, the line about how the best weapon that supernatural beings have is the fact that people don't believe in them. That is such a creepy idea.
Okay. Oh, I do believe in them. You don't.
Oh my God.
You don't.
It's such a creepy thing to think about. Like that, oh my God, of course, he's right down the hall, but you don't believe in him. That's why he's not getting caught. Again, I don't believe, but it's a creepy thing to consider in the terms of horror stories.
That's why I freak out every night listening to all the 411 cases and things in the forest, the fairies. Oh, that's a good line. It is true.
The gothic locations, when they are used at the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie, mm-hmm. where they ram the stake through Dracula's heart, it's got that big staircase, mm-hmm. those locations are great. Like, that's what I wanted from this movie. Not the living room of some London townhouse.
Yeah.
London.
That looks nice.
Apartment.
Just, yeah,
it looks like a nice
really
apartment.
Bright. Yeah.
That's not what I want from a Dracula movie. I want gothic-y stuff. And
yeah,
it's got...
but back then you didn't have a lot. You didn't know what you wanted.
What do you mean you didn't have
back
a lot?
Back then you only have two movies. Or three.
What are you talking about? Cinema had been gone since like the middle of the
1910s. Yeah, but Dracula.
Right.
How many Dracula's movies did you have by 1931?
Right. Okay, yes, this might be the second.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Back then, you didn't know the expectations. Like, you wanted more gothic. With the time,
okay,
we learned, like, we actually just like when they're in Hungary. Like,
right.
Yes, focus on
but
that.
But that is such a huge, important part of the novel. I say to just abandon it.
Because they try like, maybe it's not, let's bring it back where we can actually work with things than spending more money and making a castle
but
and all that.
Universal Studios, though, they're not short of money. Some of the sets they build for later films, some of the effects they pull for later films are pretty, they're technical advancements of the time. Like, they had this ability in them. I get that this might be the first one of the franchise. And I get the idea of to sort of reserve it, but what I'm saying is they could have expanded it a bit. Like, it's so boring to watch. I can't wrap my head around how people thought this was interesting.
Maybe we are being too harsh on the movie because it's the first one. We need to watch more of this, but also I think like back then they, as you say, they didn't want to take much of a risk.
I don't know.
What they show or whatever. I don't know. So they're trying and they're like, okay, it did work. Let's do this.
Right,
it did
but
work.
For example,
let's keep doing that. And there's more money on this. Again, was horror a thing back
yes.
then?
Yes. The whole German expressionism thing had happened.
Yes, okay. Then if it's...
Have you seen images, just images from like something like the cabinet of Dr. Caligari?
No.
Right. There's images from that creep me out just looking at them. That's a creepy image. Nosferatu, that's a creepy image. The shadow going up the stairway, that's creepy. That is creepy.
So those movies were from?
They're from Germany.
Exactly. So they were like, oh.
But they were seen.
Do we like this kind of thing? Do you think our customers are going to like remember? They did some kind of research about it. Don't know about it. Maybe the tendency in the States back then, it was more like, oh, don't do that much. It's too weird. It's too like, let's not go that far.
Don't think so. Given that this franchise ends up including Frankenstein, they'd already done the Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we saw it in Shudder's 101. That was before.
Mm-hmm.
That we're talking about the Phantom of the Opera, a different version. But they've done that in that reveal that people face, freaked out of the disfigured face or whatever. I'd shown you the image of Lauren Chaney in the London After Midnight. That's a creepy image. It's a creepy image. It's not terrifying, but it's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It inspires the Babadook, which is a creepy monster from now. Still works. To me, this, I get the... Yes, Bela Lugosi, you got it right. I'm nailing that point down to the ground. You got it right. Everything else about this movie, basically in terms of how it looks and how it's put together, I don't find it confusing like you did, but I find it dull and boring and uninteresting.
Okay.
Except okay. One last
okay,
thing.
Okay,
Dad. Dwight Fry, I believe his name is. His performance is Renfield. He also goes in my good books. When they get off the boat at London and they come into the ship and he's down at the bottom of the ship looking up the stairs,
yeah.
You did say to me, that's quite creepy.
Yeah, like
he's... And he's like laughing and he's mad.
Yeah, like his eyes are open, the mouth is really wide. It's like, yeah.
But yes, I agree. I like him. But again, the film doesn't know how to use him. Because it's like, is he like a comic side relief character? Like he just wanders in and then everybody just sort of... Nobody seems threatened by him.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what is happening? So, as we go on, as I say, we're covering a period of 20 plus years as we do this. One a month. I'm very excited to do it because basically all of these films I've never seen. They are classics of the genre. But it starts on, in my opinion, it starts on a low bar. I think this is easily cleared.
Okay. Well, I have a question for you.
Oh, sorry.
So, Dracula. That's what we just did. Vampires. Which is your favorite vampire movie?
Okay. Yeah, I know what yours is. And yours, I am not going to say it, but I need to rewatch it. I would say... Oh, how could it not be? It's The Lost Boys.
I thought you were about to say Twilight.
No, it's The Lost Boys.
Fair enough.
Twilight, I think, is overhated. I don't think it's good, but I've said to you, since we watched them, people like it, they don't like it, and they like to make fun of it because it's aimed at teenage girls. And for some reason... If you aim something at teenage girls, that automatically means it's bad.
Yeah.
And I think that's a terrible outlook. And it's fine for what it is. But no, The Lost Boys, when I was a little kid, like 11, 12, that was just the coolest movie, The Lost Boys. I love that movie so much. So it's got to be my favorite vampire movie. I know what yours is.
Okay, tell me which one.
Yours is Interview with the Vampire.
Yes, I love that movie. I just like, they're so cute and sexy. And
the reason I know that, I've only seen that movie once and we've never watched it together.
Yeah, we never watched it together.
And the reason I know it's your favourite is because I love Tom Cruise and you don't. And that's the one movie where you're like, I love Tom Cruise. And I'm like, that must be her favourite movie.
I love
movie.
Tom Cruise in that movie, yes. But yeah, we should watch that.
We should watch it at some point. But there's loads of vampire films I would like to watch. I've never seen any of Christopher Lee's Draculas. Never seen any of them.
I did watch Dracula with... It's a TV show with Jonathan Rhys-Meyer.
I did not. We watched the Dracula with Claes Bang.
Yeah, I didn't
which
like
started
that.
Well and ends badly.
Yeah.
Ends very badly.
It's really weird. But yeah, what else?
You've never seen Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula with Gary Oldman and Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder?
I would like to see that.
That's a good movie. That is a good movie.
I steal this movie. It's not What We Do. What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, that's... Well, yeah, of course. I've seen the movie. I've never seen the TV show. I've heard the TV show is excellent.
Oh, I saw the movie.
Did you?
It's not the one that... They
it's
have this house, like a big house that they just...
Taika Waititi.
I think so. I think I watched... I mean, I watched it by myself. I remember watching it in Mexico by myself, like Netflix
yes,
or something.
They've got four vampires living at home. It's like a documentary. It's like a fake documentary. It's a comedy. And then they made a TV show version, which has got three seasons, I believe. Taika Waititi's not in the TV show version, but I hear is excellent, and I need to get around to that. That's on my list.
Hold on.
Okay. What other vampire movies?
If the movie I watched, they're like in this town.
30 Days of Night.
No, it was Dark Shadows.
Dark Shadows, the Johnny Depp movie.
Yeah.
The Tim Burton movie.
Hold on, let me see. I think
I've never seen it. But it's late period Burton, and I'm not interested in late period Burton. Except Wednesday. I thought Wednesday was quite good.
What We Do in the Shadows called?
That is the, yes.
What We Do in the Shadows.
That's the TV show. That's the TV show. That's not the movie.
What We Do in the Shadows movie.
I would also like to see Thirst by Park Chan-wook, because I love Park Chan-wook as a director. I love Old Boy. I love The Handmaiden. Thirst is a vampire movie he made, and I've never seen it, so that's on my list. There's vampires are always interesting. They're always, like, vampires are...
Was that this one, is what one was, with Tilda Swinton?
I've never seen that either.
Wait, what's it called?
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes, I've seen that one.
With Tom Hiddleston.
I don't know. I only remember her... She being in like Morocco mm-hmm. or something. Yeah, I've seen that one too.
I haven't seen that.
I don't remember liking it that much.
Interesting. But that's what I mean. Like, so vampires basically do anything.
Yeah.
They can do anything. Like vampire, like if you Google Count Dracula in popular culture, there's a Wikipedia page. Count Dracula in popular culture. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about him in movies and TV shows and everything. Count Dracula has been in comic books. Dracula's been in fucking everything. Right, there is a section on that page called devoted to pornography.
God, come.
And I was wondering, is Dracula, more than any other fictional character, the most sexual and seductive character
that ever has been? Yes,
there you go. And also, I was reading that little thing, and it said, this is a quote from Wikipedia, Dracula often appeared in various sexploitation and hardcore adaptations from the 1960s onward. In these films, Dracula is not always exclusively heterosexual or male. So, is Dracula not only the most sexual character, but the most queer character that horror has ever had?
Maybe. What about the Babadook?
The Babadook has become a queer icon because of a Netflix fuck-up. They put it in LGBTQ movies, and people were like, why?
And then all of a sudden they were like, fuck it,
it's a gay movie.
Yes, I love it.
Just because of it. But Dracula is in that genre.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I think that's fascinating. This is where it all starts. Well, not exactly, but this is the big opening one for Universal, for English language audiences. It's 1931, it's Dracula, and I think both me and Izella have come to the conclusion that it's not very good.
No.
So, apologies if you know someone that was in the making, if you're related to someone that was in the making of such a classic, but...
good things, probably they are dead.
I assume they have offspring and they have legacies and families and estates. But anyway, thank you for listening. Next episode will be a new release.
Mm-hmm.
It will be...
Megan.
Of course it will be Megan. Talking of queer icons, she's become a gay icon before the movie even came out. People were like, holy fuck, Megan, top of the list.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
So, very excited to see that. And then next month, we will be carrying on the Universal Monsters with a movie that was released the same year as Dracula and is also probably one of the most famous... pop culture monsters of all time. It is, of course, Frankenstein. Until then, thank you for listening.
Gracias por escucharnos.
Y
hasta la próxima.